The Success in South Florida podcast is brought to you by the team at Rawson Law Firm. If you need DUI or criminal defense representation, call the Rawson Law Firm at 754-206-6200 or check the description of today's episode for more contact information. The Rawson Law Firm, helping good people when bad things happen so they can achieve their best futures.
Welcome to Success in South Florida, featuring interviews with entrepreneurs, leaders, and other movers and shakers across South Florida to find out how they're doing their part to enhance the local community. Your host is Adam Rawson, the founder and CEO of the Rawson Law Firm. Adam's an award-winning attorney, former prosecutor, and a lifelong South Florida resident. He became an attorney because he believes in helping those in need and in crafting lifelong relationships in the community. This podcast is an extension of that mission. Let's get to today's interview. Here's Adam Rawson.
All right. Welcome to another episode of Success in South Florida. I'm your host, Adam Rawson. On today's episode, I'm very excited to have Dr. Guillermo Bello, a.k.a. Dr. B, on the show. How you doing, Guillermo?
I'm doing good. Happy to be here.
All right. Fantastic. So why don't you introduce yourself to the audience and just tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do.
So I went to school for a long, long time. So I became a chiropractor. I did a master's in sports science and sports rehab. I did a fellowship in anti-aging and regenerative medicine. And then I did an MBA. So I did a lot of that also while working. So
you have a lot of degrees. Smart guy.
Yes, I do. A lot of studying. It's a lot of busy work. School, I've learned, is a lot of busy work. Some things are very important to go to school for. And some things I have to admit, that was not the best investment of my time and money. So it's very important, I guess we're taking our first tangent here, to kind of figure out where you want to go in life, because you have to make decisions of investments of time and money. And you want to make sure that you get the best out of it when you do it. So I have to say, I don't regret any of the paths I've taken, because they've gotten me to where I am, and I'm pretty happy to be here. But I have learned that some of the stuff I learned in school, I could have learned a lot more or more useful things, or they were just for another purpose. So to give you an example, not to put the program down at any sort of way, because it was a great program, but I wanted to be an entrepreneur. So the MBA is tailored more to, like, if you're going the corporate route. So while I learned a lot during the MBA, it didn't create that much impact or value onto going into by running my own business, because it was an MBA focused on healthcare. If I would have done an MBA focused on entrepreneurship, I might have gotten more bang for my buck. But when I finished, it was all the process of, like, how to run hospitals and how to be this in the hospital and how to do that in the system or in the program or in the business. And I'm not that size, and I'm not into that corporate side of things. So I spent a year and a half going to an MBA that in the end I would probably say I should have picked a different MBA. I should have gone more of the entrepreneur route.
And but, yeah. Not just time, but money too, right? I mean, did you pay for that, or were you on full scholarship?
I paid for it. I did a partial payment, partial debt. So I'm still paying for it.
Right. Yeah. And a year and a half, especially in a busy working professional's life, is quite a long time. So I completely understand. You know, and I can tell you, for us, for lawyers, I mean, law school is 3 years. They do have some post-law school degrees you can get, an LLM. Usually it's a one-year program. I know they have it for tax law and for some other areas of law. It's basically a master's of law. But I don't even think 3 years is needed for law school anymore. I mean, the whole first year of law school is just learning about cases from the 15 and 1800s that make no sense. I think really, you know, you could probably compress it into 2 years with, you know, 1 year of it being just a fellowship program. And I think people would be just fine in that.
That would be a bad business model for the university.
Well, of course. Right. Right. So I guess that's a whole different talk that we can have about the business of higher education.
Actually one of the subjects I'm going through, like a home and mental battle I'm going through, is like, do I want to put my kids through this process of where I know the schools are at and where they're going? And then, are there any different options? And so far, the options I've heard is like homeschooling, but I'm at work and my wife looks at me like, you're crazy if you're leaving the kids at home for homeschooling. But right. I definitely would like to get them I would change some things in the schooling system. Like, I would like to see my kids grow up like a little more prepared and less, you know, bubble in the answer and multiple choice kind of things, more critical thinking, more able to come out into the world and deal with the problems than to take an SAT or a TOEFL or whatever the exams are.
Well, you know, it's funny. So every time we talk to somebody, I never know where it's going to go. And I think this is a great conversation for us to have, you know, right now, because look, the podcast is about success, and it's about, you know, whether it's, if you're an entrepreneur, it's about entrepreneurship. If you're, you know, a technician, it's just about being successful at a technician or a skill. We've had many different people across all different industries, from athletics to medicine, to lawyers, to, I don't know what, a lot of things, business, right? On our show already, and we haven't really talked much about education. So I have a 4-year-old and an 8-month-old, and I know you have a newborn and four years old. Right. So we have kids the same age, and my wife and I are both lawyers, very highly educated, and we've had this conversation over the last 4 years since my eldest son was born about, what do we do, right? Is it private school versus public? Is it all about knowing multiple choice answers or being good at an SAT and regurgitating information? Or is it about actual real life skills? Nobody taught us how to balance a checkbook, read a P&L statement, right? Just know about life or business or really anything in school. And I think a lot of that is kind of wasted right now, especially with the opportunities that are available to people. I mean, there's teenage millionaires from YouTube, right? From YouTube and social media that they don't need to go to college, right? Mm-hmm. There's people who become a plumber at 18, 19 years old who are making really good money, or an electrician. Yep. They don't need to go to college, right? They don't need to do any of that stuff, and they can have very, very successful careers, maybe just as being Joe the Plumber or owning a Joe the Plumber, you know, 3-location franchise without ever needing higher education. Mm-hmm. So Guillermo, so what are your thoughts? I mean, have you and your wife had like deep conversations about that? Because my wife and I are starting to do that.
So we haven't gotten really deep, because it always, the answer seems to be lately, like, it's homeschooling. There's some actual programs that are breaking those patterns, but it's homeschooling. And obviously, like, having the kids at home all day, it's not really what, and having to be responsible for them going to school is not something she's very into. It, she understands where I'm at, and she does like agree. I forgot the name of the school right now, but there was one school that supposedly was opening in Miami, that was created by an entrepreneur and MBA teachers who were trying to create these thoughts. And there's a couple of schools of them around. I forgot the name right now, but she was open to looking into it and changing my kid from school. But to be honest, like, it's something that has really been on our head, in our head, but like, we haven't really dig deep into it. I mean, we have to do more. There's always the other issue that comes up is like, well, in school is where you make friends, is where you become social, right, all these kind of things. But in the end, the fact that they're being like homeschooled doesn't mean they don't go to after school activities. They're still in clubs. They're still in other things. But in the end, like, I want to make sure my kids can think. So
right, critical example, thinking, right?
The biggest example I could give you right now, when I went to chiropractic school, I remember very much there's something called listings. So listings is basically like a couple of letters that tell you which way the vertebra rotated and moved. And then there's different techniques for adjusting. I never memorized anything because I have the ability to like see it in my mind. So when you tell me like, you know, it's a PR, I know it went posterior and to the right. And then when you tell me what technique you want me to use, I can see that I'm pulling or I'm pushing, and I can explain what I'm going to do without a problem. But I would go to study groups and they were memorizing, like, if it's a PR and you're using the technique this, you need to sit, you need to stand on the opposite side and contact this, but it's all memorized. They couldn't right, understand what they were physically doing. And I had to grab one. I left those study sessions because they were confusing me, because it was all memorization of like, if this is the listing and this is the technique, this is how you stand and this is where your contact point is. And I'm like, there's so many techniques and a bunch of listings and everything's going to change. Why would I need to memorize it if I can just see it? So I left a study session and one of my friends came to, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to do this with you because you came to me, but like, can you see it? She's like, no. Okay. So I grabbed a vertebra like this.
Right.
And I'm like, so if this rotated this way, can you pull here? Are you pulling or pushing? I'm pulling. Okay. Then why do you need to memorize it? Just look at it, what you're doing physically. And she's like, oh, wow, that makes more sense. That's easier. And I was like, right. Yes, but you're having chiropractors that are going to do this for the rest of their life. And they don't grasp the concept of what they're doing. They're memorizing letters. And I'm like, that's not the way things need to be. We need to understand what we're doing. Even with all my schooling and having been out for years and having to deal with loans and all these things, like one thing I'm always having to double check is like when I try and do the math for interest rates and all this stuff, I'm like, am I doing the interest rate correct? It's 18% a year. So how does this break down a month, or is it 18 a month? And I'm like, so, and then I have to go to like Google calculator thing. But you should be able to understand how all this works, how a mortgage impacts you, how capitalism works versus anything else. Like, and they're not teaching it anymore, and we're not understanding it. And that just makes our life so much more difficult when we get out there, because we just become like part of what society tells you is next, instead of us actually creating a plan for our own life of where we want to be and how to get there.
Right. Yeah. No, I completely agree. And, you know, so you're looking at it more for, you know, the homeschooling and initial impact. You know, I live in Boca Raton. We have great public schools. We have three amazing private schools there as well. One of the things that I'm looking into, you know, we don't know if we're doing public or private, but one of the private schools I know has a great reputation for having a robotics club and having a law society where they have a mock courtroom and these things that are a little different, right, than just traditional math, science, English, history kind of curriculum. But right, it's about, you know, they should have business and entrepreneurship, and not everybody needs to skew that way either, but just have a whole host of different things. Have coding classes, right? People, yep. You know, people these days need to know, this stuff about the internet. And I think now with especially with ChatGPT coming along, I think, yeah, it's nice that people need to know how to write, but at the end of the day, you need to really, like, they should be teaching people how to embrace it and how to use it and how to learn the prompts, because there's multiple six-figure jobs now. You know, just for being right, that are going away or that are going to people who know how to prompt AI. And so I think the world changes so fast, and the education system tends to change very slowly.
It's funny. We were having that discussion yesterday with some patients, like literally the last four patients in my office last night, that was the conversation. And one of the patients, she's like, but they need to learn how to write. I'm like, why? I mean, writing is thinking, and I sort of agree with what you're saying, but like, we don't need to write anymore. She's like, yes, you do. And I'm like, I never write. I never have to write. Well, but you need to write emails. Okay, but ChatGPT can write my email for me.
Gmail has had AI integrated in it for at least 2 years with AI suggestions, and at least in my email.
Yeah.
I don't think it's like writing cursive. Right? Writing cursive has been dead for how long?
Or I good still write cursive, funnily enough.
Do you? I have a hybrid of slop between cursive and print, and only I can read it, which is fine. But you know, you mentioned so Guillermo, you mentioned capitalism, right? Now you grew up in Venezuela, so let's talk a little bit about your journey from Venezuela here to the States. And, you know, how old were you, and what was life like back in Venezuela? And then what was life like transitioning over here?
Oh, life changed very, very much. I was born in Venezuela. I was there for 14 years. My father was a developer, and I would have to say we were definitely very high class when we were there. So anything you think like rich people have, I probably grew up with until the age of 14. We had maids, chauffeur, beach house, boat, you know, Miami house. So we actually had like three vacation homes. My dad's company had a plane because he had to travel a lot. So I got to like fly to Aruba in a private plane once.
Very nice. Very nice.
They sold that one. I never got to use the plane too much. But yeah, he had a private plane. And basically everything was going upwards in life. And then when Chavez came in, we moved here. He still tried to, you know, keep his company going. But then, you know, all these regulations and things started to appear. Corruption got 10 times worse. And life here is a hell of a lot more expensive than over there. So when we moved here, it was just my brother, myself, and my mother. My sister was going to college over there, so she didn't want to come. And my father would come and go and live with my sister over there. After a year, my sister...
Did you move to Miami?
Yes.
Okay.
So we had a vacation home here, so that just became our permanent home.
Okay.
In theory, when we moved, it was just to come to school and we'd go back. But then, obviously, things just kept getting worse and worse. And, well, to fast forward 20 years of socialism in Venezuela, my parents are, like, completely broke. So now it is up to the three children to help out sometimes. My dad still works, and he's trying his best to get things rolling in other options. He got some business done in Panama. He's done stuff, but obviously not the same lifestyle. And yeah, to be honest, I mean, my parents are not in the best place they could be compared to where they were 20 years ago. And even compared to a lot of people, I know he has to move things around sometimes to make ends meet. So yeah, we went from having everything to almost having nothing. So when I started my own business, my father was paying for my chiropractic school. And then every year it got harder and harder. So I know he meant well, but the last year he's like, just put it on your credit card and I'll send you the money later. I was like, okay, well, you know, whatever. I don't care. My dad's going to send me the money later. I'll put it on my credit card. So when I graduated chiropractic school, he paid for most of it. I'm not complaining, but I was in a little bit of a bad place because I had $35,000 in debt. I didn't have a job yet.
At 25% interest, whatever it is, yeah, right?
At 20% interest, I'd remember, because after a year that I knew, I noticed I couldn't take it down. I had to call the credit card companies and say, like, look, I'm a doctor and I can't keep up with you guys at 20%. Like, I need help. So they lowered it to like 17 or something like that. But yeah, that's when I started kind of going into the professional world. It's $35,000 at 20% interest, right, and didn't have a job. But at least, you know, I got almost to the end of my doctor career with my parents paying for it. So I've got no complaints. But yeah, it definitely, this socialism world, not recommended. And you know, the funny part is, I don't want to get too political into this whole thing because I want to ruffle some feathers, but one of the things that I realized is when you live it, you can see it before it even happens. Like, I'm sure the first time you went to court, you couldn't understand half of the stuff going on. Now it's like, since the judge came in, you're like, oh, he's in a good mood today, or he's in a bad mood. Or like,
yeah, I tell our clients that I have the ability to see the future, right? Which, yeah. I mean, I'm joking, but it's true because of experience, right? Yep. Experience, knowledge. Yeah.
So I remember when I moved here that Chavez had just come in, all the Cubans were telling us like, oh man, you guys are going down the exact same road. And we would be like, no, man, in Venezuela, this can't happen. Like, Cuba's an island. You guys are like isolated. That's why this happened to you guys. You had bad luck. And they're like, oh, you're going down the same hole. Right, same rabbit hole, same path, same everything. And they were like they would show me like the patterns. And I was like, no, it can't happen in Venezuela. Well, 20 years later, here we are in Venezuela. Everybody knows where it is. And for the last like maybe 10 years, probably about the last 10 years. And I remember in the NBA very well, a conversation I had with a friend. I tell him like, man, U.S. is going through some things that are like the exact same pattern of how it started over there when Chavez came in. No, man, the U.S., we've got checks and balances. The U.S., it can't happen here. And, man, it's been 10 years now, and I'm going to say it's happening. I mean, I can see a lot of parallels. It's slower. It's a lot slower than the speed it moved over there, but it's still in the same direction. So that part worries me quite a bit. And yeah, Americans think it can't happen here, which is the scary part. Like, they're saying the exact same thing I was saying 20 years ago. Oh, it can't happen here. It can't happen here.
Right. I think anything in life, when you have that closed mindset, You know, oh, it's not, it couldn't happen to me, or it can't happen here, or no, you know, right? It's a recipe for disaster. And fingers crossed, hopefully we don't we don't get there without making this podcast too political. Yeah. But it is kind of scary with, you know, some of the way things are changing. So absolutely. So, but Guillermo, you know, so you came at 14. Right. And I know you, obviously you had a vacation house in Miami, so you knew Miami well. You know, you're from a Spanish speaking country. I'm sure that made it much easier to assimilate down here. But, you know, going from kind of 14 to 22, right, that maybe, you know, that's a very pivotal, what, 8 year period in in everybody's life. Were there a lot of struggles moving over, you know, and just kind of adapting to a new society, a new country? And did that influence you in any way of just wanting to be a doctor, wanting to, you know, right, be a chiropractor and obviously get multiple advanced degrees and seeing what your parents went through?
Well, there were a lot of things. I would have to say probably the first year was the toughest. I remember, I think I ate lunch by myself for like a month, because when I went into school, I knew absolutely nobody.
And 14, did you go in eighth grade or ninth grade?
I was a freshman at Columbus.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's tough.
So everybody knew at least one person in school. So I was eating lunch like in the corner table over there by myself, like the weird guy. Right. But I didn't know anybody. I had moved to Miami 2 weeks before school started. So I remember I got here. I think my parents did it sort of on purpose, so I didn't have any time to think. So I remember, like, I moved here. We bought like uniforms, we did this, we kind of fixed the house up a little bit, and I was starting school in like 5 days or whatever.
No time to think, no time to complain, no time to say I want to go back.
Yeah, pretty much. That's kind of how it happens. So the first year was tough. I don't know anybody. The culture was very different. Changing languages, understanding the slang, understanding that everything was different was pretty tough. It wasn't the easiest part. But something good came out of it that I was not a good student in Venezuela. Venezuela's culture is very bad, meaning the teacher, like the good teacher, is the one that has more students like failing. That's the hardest teacher is the good teacher, that kind of attitude. And when I moved here, I realized like the good teacher is the opposite. The good teacher here is the one that has, you know, most students passing and most students with good grades. Because in the end here, what they care is that the students are learning. So in theory, if they have good grades, it means the students are understanding and grasping the concepts and getting to do what they need to do. So I went from pretty much failing almost everything in Venezuela to going to college here with a 75% scholarship based on my grades. So that changed life a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. Good. Good, good, good. So what we're going to do right now is we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsor, the Rossin Law Firm. And then when we come back, I want to talk more about, you know, about Dr. B, about how you came up with it, what the plan is, what it was like opening, the vision for it, the role mentors have played. And let's talk about EO as well, because, you know, we're in EO together. So we'll be right back to hear a word from our sponsor, and we'll get into all some of the good stuff.
When something bad happens, who do you turn to? In South Florida, the answer is the Rossin Law Firm. Criminal and DUI defense for when bad things happen to good people. The Rossin Law Firm is a team of 8 criminal defense attorneys, including 2 board-certified criminal trial experts. They also have federal and white-collar divisions in the practice. To learn more about the team and how they can help you, connect on Facebook and Instagram at Rossin Law Firm. You'll also find helpful and entertaining videos on Rossin Law Firm YouTube channel. Just check this episode's description for all the ways you can connect.
All right, and we're back on Success in South Florida with Dr. Guillermo Bello, Dr. B. So Dr. B, let's talk about the business aspect, right? So you got out of chiropractic school and you created Dr. B. So tell us what exactly Dr. B is.
Well, a little correction. I actually worked as an employee first before I went on my own. But Dr. B is my vision of how physical therapy and like anything that has to do with the way your body moves, acts, feels, should be. So I kind of break the pattern of what everybody does in the sense that I combine the best of what everybody does.
Okay.
So if you come into my office, it doesn't look like a chiropractic office. it looks a little more maybe like a physical therapist office, but then we have chiropractic tables, we have massage rooms, we have super high tech for exercise equipment and therapy equipment like lasers, shockwave. And I try and combine everything that I have that works. So if you go to a chiropractic office, or most, I'm not going to put everybody in the same bucket, but most chiropractors adjust. They do an adjustment, maybe a couple of exercises for the neck and the low back, and that's about it. If you tore your ACL, they don't know how to diagnose it. They send you to an orthopedist. If you have knee pain, like, they don't really do anything with it, and they don't know what to do pre or post surgery if they get an MRI with an ACL tear, et cetera. But in our office, we go everything from head to toe, headaches, tinnitus, vertigo, dizziness, neck pain, ACL tears, ankle sprains, and we go through everything. So we go through a lot of manual work. We use a lot of massage therapists to get manual work done so we can reduce inflammation, so that we can release muscle spasms. Then we use a lot of chiropractic adjustments and manipulations to align the joints and take off pressure. And then we'll use a lot of physical therapy exercises to stabilize and strengthen the area so you don't suffer from it again. So my goal is not to have patients forever, although it's an amazing way to live because you have recurring revenue. But my goal is to heal everybody so that you refer more patients, because we're the best at taking care of your body.
So how did you kind of come up with the idea of taking, you know, multiple modalities and different things and just combining it into one and being different than just the norm or the traditional?
So I guess the path I took kind of molded everything together for me. I always loved medicine. Like, I've always loved the body. I'm kind of like this athlete that wished they would have been a pro athlete or would have done more. Like, and obviously being an athlete all my life, I've also been a patient because I've had sprained ankles. I tore my ACL and meniscus. I've gone through the PT world. And I also went through chiropractor because I had low back pain when I was about 20. But I didn't like what I saw in medicine. Like, MDs are getting trained that everything gets solved with like a surgery or some type of medication, a shot, a pill. And well, I don't believe that. I believe the body has an innate ability to heal, and we just need to get out of its way, get out of its way and help it. Okay. And that's where my mentality is. So like, when I looked at the MD world, I was like, well, unless I become an orthopedist and actually fix things with my hands, which I love to do, I don't think I want to be an MD. Like, it's not where my head is or my heart. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. You know, like, oh, I have muscle spasm. Here's a pill. Well, why do I have a muscle spasm? I shouldn't have one. So as I went to the chiropractor, I started adjusting people and doing everything he did to me to like my friends. And my mother was the one that said, like, why don't we go to that chiropractic school up here in Florida and see, like, just take a look at it. So they took me up there. And by the time I was done with the tour, my mom had signed me up.
That's great. That's amazing.
So I got in, but I wasn't in for another like 9 months. I would start in 9 months after I got in. So I'm like, what am I going to do for 9 months? So my father is like, you know what? I'm going to call my friend who owns a physical therapy center in Venezuela. And why don't you go work? And I was like, okay. So I moved to Venezuela for like 6 months and I worked there. And since, you know, Venezuela doesn't have that many laws, by the time I was out in 6 months, I had my own patient load. Like, I was seeing patients, and like the first day, the doctor's like, okay, flexion and extension. And I'm like, I don't even know what flexion and extension is. I haven't gone to school yet. Like, mm-hmm. You know, 6 months later.
So the real beginning of Dr. B was in Venezuela, unapproved, yep. Unlicensed.
Correct.
Okay. So, basically in the back of a van.
But no, it was a legit super like high-end like center. Right. But I guess one, I was capable and I was learning and I was there for so long. I mean, I was every day. I was in there every single day for 6 months. So at first I was only looking, and then it was like, help me get the hot pack. And then it was like, okay, now you know how to use the electrical stimulation. Can you connect the patient? And then like, well, you've seen me do the manipulation on this guy for 10, you know, visits in a row. Can you do them? And then I would do it. And the guy was like, okay, this guy can do it. So by the end, I had a guy who had a gunshot wound to his shoulder. So they reconstructed his shoulder and I was doing the rehab for his shoulder.
Oh, wow.
So I was doing all this stuff by the time I got to school. And that actually gave me a great start above like the rest of my class, because when they came into school, the first year is like all of it is theoretical. You don't touch anybody. But I had been working 6 months already working with patients. So when we got to when I went to touch the first person, like it was just another one more person for me. And some of my classmates, like that was the first body they were putting their hands on. So they were super nervous. They didn't want to hurt anybody. And I was like, no, I know I can push and it's not going to happen. Like, where you're going to be fine. So that part, I think, gave me a good head start because I felt comfortable, you know, with bodies and moving them around. And
so that goes back to the conversation we had earlier about, you know, theoretical knowledge versus practical skills and experience, right? And, yep. And I guess the experience is what helped you get a leg up on all of your other classmates, is having that real life, you know, again, knowing, yeah, I can do this. I can, you know, manipulate the body this way without being scared or nervous.
Yeah, I remember when I was in chiropractic school, I wasn't the best student in the classes, but in all the practical classes where it was literally like, do this, do that, I think my lowest grade was like a 92.
Right.
I was doing great. But in like theory, I had some classes I could have done better. But I still did good enough.
Well, it's the old saying, right? What do they call the last one in med school, right? Doctor.
Yeah.
You know, what do they call the last one in law school? Lawyer. So it's kind of the same thing. So now, you know, you have all this right, great experience from physical therapy to chiropractic, and you started, you know, you worked for somebody else. Now you've had your own, and really you want to have this grand vision. So what are you doing from the marketing perspective, the entrepreneurship, the business perspective, you know, right? Because all the things that, I mean, well, you did go to school for it, albeit kind of the, mm-hmm. you know, you even stated the wrong MBA. But, you know, what's like that 5-10 year plan? Where do we expect to see Dr. B in 5 to 10 years?
Whew, I've got a lot of goals. So when I started, the vision wasn't very clear. The only vision I had is like, I don't want to have a boss ever again. I had $30,000 in the bank and $35,000 in debt. And I said, I'm not working for anybody else again until my bank account hits zero. I'm going on my own. And it was tough going at first, because I remember my week 5 and week 6, I saw one patient twice for 2 weeks. So I had 4 total visits in 2 weeks and I was freaking
scary.
Out.
Yeah, scary.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I'm not going to make it. This is horrible. Oh, my God. I can't believe it. But, you know, I said, I'm not getting a job till bank account hits zero. And like, I said that to myself and I meant it. So I just started going with, you know, I'm alive. Hi, I'm a chiropractor. I'm here. I opened an office kind of thing. Everybody was kind of, you know, my mom was sending me people and like the people that knew me, they're like, oh, he went on his own. And then slowly but surely I did the job correctly. And then I just started getting referrals. And within the first year, I didn't fit in the office I had rented because I had rented like literally just a room. So the goal now is we have 2 offices. We're in Brickell and Doral. The Brickell office, we just did a gigantic upgrade last year to a bigger office with a lot of more equipment and technology to implement the second part of my vision, which is sports performance and injury prevention. So that my goal in 10 years would be to have, we're talking about probably about 4 centers and have them all looking like the Brickell office with all the equipment from Techno Gym and being able to do sports performance and training. Basically, the way I have structured my office is like I'm the first patient and I'm buying everything I want as an athlete and as a human being that likes his body and wants to be fit and wants to train. And you get to pay to use it.
Hey, there you go. And it's right. It's a business expense.
So the goal right now that I'm envisioning is in the office, I want to put a cold plunge, a hyperbaric chamber. You have all the equipment and then have some sort of membership where you get to use all of those things for yourself. So you pay X amount a month and then you have access to all of the stuff that I have in the office. We make you a plan. So for example, for you is basketball. So if you want to play better basketball, because you know you've realized you've been working harder. So now you can't really jump like you used to, and you can't change the directions the way you used to. So you come to me and like, look, I really want to go back to playing basketball without being worried all the time that I'm going to get hurt. Or like, you know, I still want to perform in the court, man. I know there's a lot of stuff I could do, but I'm not quite there yet. Okay. So we need to strengthen your legs. We need to strengthen your capacity to change directions. And we need to increase your vertical jumper a little bit and stabilize your ankles. Those are the four main things that we're going to have to do for you. So I'm going to make a plan for you that's going to be twice a week for 4 weeks, 6 weeks, depending on where you're at and where you want to be. And you come in twice a week. You have your plan. You execute your plan. Then you have your cold plunge. Then you can do your 30 minutes in the hyperbaric chamber, which is all health related. So my goal is to get people healthier. I don't like taking care of sick people. I love health. And I think that the world is starting to understand it, that life is about being healthy so that you can enjoy it. Because there's no point in living 100 years if the last 20 years you're in a wheelchair and you can barely
Absolutely. Talk. Absolutely. You know, and the saying, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. You know, mm-hmm. It's something that always sticks with me. So yeah, I think you're spot on. I love it. I love the idea. Sign me up.
So yeah, that's the goal. And there's always technology coming out. We're trying to make relationships with people so that we become like the place to go for professional athletes, because they're all coming to Miami on vacation. So
I hear there's a soccer player who is coming down here. You might want to get.
I've heard there's some noise. I've heard a little bit of noise. Not sure who it is. But yeah, right now, like, to be honest, with the conversations that we've been having, it's been great, because I'm like two clicks away from like almost any professional athlete in the world. And everybody, there's a lot of people on board with the vision that I have. And I'm like right there on the line of like finally pushing through, because I have important people that are like, man, we like what you're doing. We're going to help you out. We need to get to this person. We need to get to that person. But we're still at that place where like people love it. We're having the conversations, but we haven't quite like gotten to where we need to be. But I think we're almost there. I'm hoping right when we get through the summer always kind of throws everybody's schedule off a little bit. So goal is that I'm hoping that when we're done with the summer, like all those conversations come to fruition.
Right. Well, you know, it's through every iteration of a business, there's always new issues, new opportunities, new fears, right? So you went all in the beginning where you had, you know, 30 grand in the bank, 35K of debt, but you didn't really have much to lose. I mean, how old were you?
27, I believe, right. 28.
So no kids at that time. Were you married?
Nope.
Right. So, you know, maybe you were dating your wife, maybe you weren't, but like basically single guy, no responsibilities, you probably didn't need that much money to live off of. That's very similar to me. You know, when I started the firm, I was 26. I had been a prosecutor for 18 months. I mean, I had a girlfriend, but that was it. And actually, no, at the time, I didn't even have a girlfriend. And, you know, I didn't really need much. So in a way, I always say like we had a plan, my old partner and I, and it was a terrible plan, but we had a plan, but we were kind of too stupid to fail. You know, two single 26-year-old guys that it's not like we were 35 with wife, kids and, you know, a whole and major bills or a mortgage to pay. We mm-hmm. really had nothing, and it made it easier, especially because the technician in me, just like you, I said, okay, I can either crawl back to be a prosecutor if they would take me back. I can work somewhere else and get a job. I can do document review on the side. Like I have opportunities because of my degree, and let's just go all in and make it work. And, you know, obviously it did, and same for you, but now you have a bigger operation, two offices, a much larger payroll, you have kids and a wife. Mm-hmm. So when you're talking about kind of end of summer and you have these people that really are interested, what are you going to do to go all in with this next iteration to get to that 10-year goal? Right. So that's the tough question I'm asking you.
So it's a roller coaster. It's not easy. There are days of doubt. There are days of like, why am I pushing myself to go more if I was actually in a good place 2 years ago? Why am I doing this? So the goal is to grow. I just love building. There's the entrepreneur is not an entrepreneur because I don't want to have a boss. I want to control my time. I, like all these comments that I'm always listening to, like the only thing that drives an entrepreneur is creation. It's this crazy hunger inside of having a vision and not being able to rest until like that vision comes to fruition in some way. That is the only reason entrepreneurs are entrepreneurs. There's no other way. It has nothing to do with time, because when you become an entrepreneur, you have less time. You've right. got no guarantees. Your money's on the line. Your time is on the line. Your family is asking you, like, where are you? Like yesterday, I left my house at 7:45 and I got home at 9:30 and I was working the whole time. I had a dinner. I had to do this. And it's so, just
because that's what it takes, right?
Yeah.
some days, yeah.
Communication with my wife is a big one, and she supports it, and she is my balance. She's the one that brings me back and says, like, you know, it's been 2 days that you haven't spent much time with the kids. You need to, like, say hello to your son. And I'm, okay, so tomorrow I'll get home earlier, and she balances me out. But I go through that process, and I always have that part of me, which you ask what I did to go all out. When I had to buy the office, I had the option of two loans happening at the same time, a loan for capital, et cetera, and the loan to buy the office. And if I were to take out both loans, it was going to be $3 million in debt in 30 days.
Big jump. And
I was sweating it. I had almost no debt. I had $100,000 in debt. That's it. That's all my office owed. And I still remember driving US 1 right at the turn where you go into Coconut Grove. I remember exactly the light I was in because I was really much like in my head. And I kind of looked at where I'm at today, where I want to go. And I remember thinking, like, you know what? When I die, it's not going to matter how much debt, how much I did, how much I didn't do. Like, the question is, like, did you try? Like, did you go for it? Like, are you going to be satisfied with you and yourself? And I'm not trying to take unnecessary risk, but it's like, this is an opportunity to have cash in an office and take a next jump. And I said, I remember saying to myself, it's like, you do it and that's it. You do it and then you figure it out, because risk is the only way that this thing's going to grow. There's no guarantees. And I signed both things and here I am.
Right.
Very much in debt, a hell of a lot more stressed, but you can see the jump that it took us to, because the new office is amazing. Life in a business is a lot slower than in personal. So like in my head and in my life, and Guillermo is ready to be making the money that it should be making to where I should be at to have taken that loan. Like I'm ready to be there. Like I need to be there, but business is slower. And business, we're used to all these stories about like the booms and this person that became a millionaire overnight. And like, first of all those stories, there's no such thing as overnight. When you actually dig into those people, they've been going at it for 10, 12, 15 years, and then they break through.
Absolutely.
But it's no overnight. So right now it's a year in since I took all that debt and I'm still stressed out. We're doing better, but not where I want to be yet. So it gives me stress. The cash flow part of things is not exactly where I'd love it, but we're on the right track. So for now, it's about, you know, I spoke to my wife and I said, look, to be able to push to where I need to be, my time is going to look like this. This is what I need from you. She told me, this is what I need from you for you to do that. And then we try and do, you know, we do it together. If you don't have, if she wasn't supporting, then it wouldn't work. Because it's definitely, she's a big part of what needs to happen so that the kids are taken care of, the home and the help and the motivation for myself to, you know, sometimes get out of bed when you're tired.
Right. Yeah. Especially when you're the owner and the entrepreneur and everything falls back on you, whether it's your name or, you know, you're in charge. You gotta, you know, we always say sometimes you gotta just shovel the crap yourself. Right. Yep. Regardless of how you feel. So I think the great lessons and takeaways from this is that, you know, risk is good, especially coming from a growth or builder mindset, right? Which is entrepreneurial. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you completely. Even there's so many parallels with you and me and just my mindset now too. It's about building and creating something. And that's the way I feel. Mm-hmm. And you can't do that if you just live a life of fear, of being too conservative. And there's a difference between silly risk, right? Or recklessness and calculated risk, strategic risks. And just because it's calculated or strategic doesn't mean it's going to work, but it has a much higher chance of working. And, and even, you know, so if it fails, you know, I love your mindset, right? But if it fails, okay, what's the worst that can happen? You're a highly educated, you know, a doctor, right? Yeah. So I think you're high in demand, and same thing for me, and right. And for any lawyers or especially the technicians out there. But the problem that I see, especially in the legal industry, is so many of us, most of us are programmed to not fail instead of to try to succeed. They have that fear of failure. And that's the really difficult thing to overcome. Even in law school, when they pit you against each other because your grades are on a curve based on everybody else. So when I went to University of Miami, it was, all right, we're going to give 3 A's out of 100 people in the class. The curve was like a C, not even a C plus. I think it was a C. So you have all these people that had never gotten below an A in their life, trying really hard and getting C's and C pluses, and they were losing their minds because they didn't know how to deal with it and deal with failure. And you know, I think it's just sometimes in our industries, it puts forth that mindset instead of a business mindset, instead of a growth or entrepreneurial mindset of, hey, you can fail forward. Right. You know, you can, you know, you can have a bad experience or, you know, quote unquote, a failure. And it could be, for some people, it's the best thing to ever happen to them, because that's how we learn to grow.
I've had 2 jobs since I graduated. Both jobs I got fired. Neither was my fault.
But there you go. Okay. So what'd you learn from those?
I got fired from both. And each time something better happened, because when I got fired from the first one, the owner of the clinic wanted to hire a neurologist. The neurologist had a younger brother who had just graduated chiropractic school. So they fired me so they could hire both of them, because if the neuro was not coming without his brother. And I was the newer doctor in the clinic and the young one. So I got fired. And from there, I got hired for my second job, and it was a better job. I had a little more flexibility and I was making a lot more money. I was making almost double. So it actually worked out great. And then with the second job, I worked there for about 1.5 years. And then they started forcing the envelope with a couple of things within the clinic, and it's my license on the line. So when I brought it up, they didn't like it and they decided to just not use me anymore and hire somebody else that was willing to go into the more gray areas of the world.
You should have given them my business card before you left.
So I left, and that was a terrible experience, because I will never forget it. I am in the car on a Sunday going to the movies with my girlfriend, and I look at my phone and I have a voicemail from the doctor that owns the clinic. I was like, okay. And I just hit play and it went over the speakers in the car. So I literally got fired over the speakers in my car with my girlfriend next to me. At least we went to the movie theaters and we didn't have to talk for 2 hours.
Oh man, that's and that's an amazing story. Right. And is that, and that's what led you to Dr. B?
Yep. After I got fired the second time, I said, you know what? I'm actually the better doctor out of the first office where I got fired, or at least I felt like it. I'm sure he might have an argument to have with me, because he's like my big brother in this world. So he's gonna get mad at me when he hears this. And then at the second office, I felt I was a better doctor and I was doing things correctly and I was getting people better. And I'm like, I know I'm good at what I do. Like, what is this thing? You know what? I'm not getting fired ever again. I'm going to do my thing my way, where I am very transparent. I don't lie. I tell patients the way it is. And my goal is to get people better, not to get paid by the insurance. I want to get paid by the insurance, but I've taken so many cases pro bono. I've taken cases that I have no idea whether I'm going to get paid on or not. And I have patients that, you know, I'm dealing with them. They're getting a lot better. And they come to me and they're like, doc, today's my last visit. I'm like, why is it today your last visit? I got fired last week, so I can't afford the treatment anymore. Because I don't know. Well, you know what? You don't have to pay me until you get another job. Just keep coming to your treatment, because we're halfway there. So there's no point in you losing everything you already did. And I'll treat them for free, because my goal is to get people better. And if you look at my business, I would say about 70% of my clients are all referred. I don't spend a lot of money on marketing, which you asked me about marketing. In my world, it's tough, the marketing, because when you're looking for a doctor, you're injured and you want the best. It's healthcare. So you're not looking for the guy with the great, you know, billboard or the super catchy song on the Instagram reel. It's like you call your friend who had the same injury and you're like, man, who did you go to for this? So
who got you better?
So my reputation is on the line. And rule number one at Dr. B, it's number one. Everything else comes afterward. Everything else is still super important. But number one is patients leave feeling better. Because even if you're having a bad day and you didn't have the best attitude with the patient and you were not the nicest that you could be, if they feel better, they'll come back because that's what they're there for. So yes, we need to treat patients better, nice. And yes, we need to be like smiling and happy and the whole thing because we're dealing with public. But the reality is we're human beings and we have bad days. But if they felt leaving better, then at least we're doing our job.
Right. And to me, that's being a community builder, right? That's being a pillar in your community because you're helping, you know, people. You're helping them get better, feel better, live better. And that's, you know, you're, and in tune, you're making your community, you know, the South Florida community, especially Miami and Doral, a better place. Right. So that it's those are very similar to the core beliefs and core values that we have at Rossin Law Firm. So, Dr. B, what advice would you have for, you know, any young person listening to this, maybe whether they want to be a chiropractor, physical therapist, doctor, or whether they want to be an entrepreneur? You know, let's kind of end on that. Just, you know, what's some great advice that you'd have for anybody listening to this and wanting to be successful?
So if you're young and you're kind of trying to figure out where you're going to go, I would recommend you reach out. I visited a lot of doctors. I spent time in a lot of doctors' offices working for free. I worked a month in one of the chiropractors close to my house. I worked like 2 months in the summer on a mobile chiropractic, other doctor who became kind of my mentor, and I call him for different things. I was in his van every single day for 2 months. And then I went to the one in Venezuela for 6 months. And in my summers, when I was off from school, I would still go visit other doctors and spend time. And that gave me exposure to a lot of different things because all the clinics were different. And it helped me know how I wanted to do my thing and how I did not want to do my thing. Because you don't know what you don't know. So you can have in your head that you want to be a lawyer. If you don't go visit a bunch of lawyers, you don't really know what being a lawyer means. And you think being a lawyer is like you're in court, you know, cross-examining the witness like in movies. But you know what? To get to that point, you spent a month in a library reading books. And if you can't stand a month in the library reading books, there's no way you're going to get to that 1 hour, you know, speech that you see in the movie. So then you're not really set out to be a lawyer. Maybe you're set out to do something else. And visit as many people as you can to see what the real day-to-day things are for those people. Because in the end, it's the everyday things that make your life. It's not the one-week vacation. It's the dinners. It's the conversations you have every day. It's the office you have to go and sit in every day. That's what makes your life. And if you're miserable there, the 1 week in Cancun and the beach is not going to make life better. It's just going to give you an escape from life, which is not the goal. The goal is to have a life worth living.
I love it. I couldn't agree more. So Dr. B, where can people find you? And, you know, and I'm sure, you know, if anybody wanted to reach out, you'd be more than happy to talk to them.
So the best place is through Instagram at Dr. B Healthy. So DRBE Healthy. If you DM me through there, I'm the person that responds. Just give me a couple of hours because I see patients. So, but normally within 24 hours, you'll hear from me. And it's me responding. It's not an AI and it's not somebody that runs my Instagram. It's myself.
Okay, perfect. So Dr. B Healthy, DRBE Healthy at Instagram. Perfect. Thank you so much for being on our podcast. And, you know, I think this has been an amazing interview. So many nuggets of wisdom and things for people to learn. And, you know, maybe I'd love to, you know, a few years, have you on and catch up and see how far along we're going to that 10-year mega goal. I love it.
Well, you're going to get some reports every month, won't you?
Yep. Oh, absolutely. I will. All right. Thanks a lot. Take care. All right.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.